What fires you up? A favorite song? A new gadget? At Doing What Works, it's lively conversation. That's our canvas. We love radio because it leaves so much to the imagination. And if you give us the next hour, we'll tickle your imagination. Now, here are your hosts for Doing What Works, Maureen and Katie Anderson.
Once upon a time, Daryl and I lived in a house. And we happened to be living in Minnesota. We knew we wanted to move to New York, but we didn't know how we were going to get there. So one day, Daryl looked at me and said, "What if we bought an RV, a motorhome, and lived in that while we're deciding?" And I gave it about a second of thought, and I said yes. And with that one word, everything changed. I think for the better. It's a little early to tell. Someday we might go into the story in a little more detail on the show. But for now, for sure, we don't have the emotional distance from it. But we do want to use it as a springboard to talk about saying yes as a way to change your life. Of course, it's going to change your life moment by moment. But sometimes the best thing to do is to decide to change it all. And Katie, you keep referring to something you learned from a professor at NYU. And his advice was exactly that.
Yes. I honestly didn't mean to do that this time. He gave a talk that was called Say Yes. It was the fall of 2014. I was an orientation leader, and it was part of the freshman orientation. Every year they have a faculty member give an address to all 600, 700 incoming students. And Adam Alter happened to be the incoming class's speaker. And he gave this talk about saying yes. And he basically articulated the idea that if you say yes to everything within reason, most of the things are not going to go anywhere, but because you say yes to everything, there are going to be a few things that do go somewhere, and that's the biggest thing. So it's basically the idea that if you cast a really wide net, if you say yes to all sorts of things, then you can't look at every one individual thing as being a success or a failure, but you have to think about the fact that most of them probably won't, but for the few that do, those are going to be really meaningful. And he brought back four different points in his life where he said yes to things that felt inconsequential at the time, but the ramifications led him to where he was that day.
Do you remember any of them?
I think one of them was, I think he had submitted a late application to a university or something. I take no responsibility for getting this wrong. I think he had submitted a late application to a university because his advisor said, you know, "Hey, why don't you just submit this anyway? It's past the deadline, but like, you never know." And it ended up being, I think, where he went to graduate school, where he met this or that person that set him on his career path. But it was one of those things where it was like, "Hey, maybe you should consider doing this." And he was just like, "Okay, sure."
Well, one reason I brought up the idea of not thinking about it is if you do that, it doesn't give your head a chance to weigh in against your heart. I think of pitching the first idea I had for an article to a newspaper. It was just for fun. I was freelancing for the newspaper, and I pitched the local airport manager on the idea of getting a free flying lesson in exchange for writing up an essay about the experience. And he said yes, and it was so much fun, and the essay appeared in the paper exactly the way I wanted it. And in the course of getting to know this gentleman, he asked me he knew I had a big transition looming, and he asked me if I'd ever given any thought to being a radio talk show host. And I said, "No, but that sounds like a blast." And in that moment, I kind of set the course for my life. I quickly batted it away after my head did get a chance to weigh in, but I'll never forget my first reaction was, yes, that's it. That's what I want to do. Of course, how could it have escaped me all these years? So to just be aware that when someone poses a proposition to you, that feels redundant, proposition, proposition, and your first reaction is yes, pay attention to it, even if the doubts creep in, because the doubts are just the world descending on you, the small voice inside, whatever. So use it as kind of a guidepost.
Yeah. So the way I look at it, and I think the way Professor Alter framed it, is to put it into business student language, it's kind of like diversifying a portfolio. The reason that, like, if you're investing in stocks, the reason that you want to have a lot of stocks from all sorts of different areas is so that even if some of them don't go well, the ones that do go well compensate for the ones that didn't. So you still end up coming out ahead. Like, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, all of the cliches there. And it's a similar thing when you're playing a numbers game. You want to say yes to all sorts of different types of things and not look at the downside of any one thing as a sign that you're on the wrong track. It's just a sign that that particular thing didn't work out, but that shouldn't mean that you should change course necessarily.
If you throw enough things against the wall, something is bound to stick.
Exactly. And you the idea is that, like, you don't know in advance what's going to stick until you've already seen it through.
The flip side to that is you also don't know when things are going to go wrong. This is a little bit of a tangent, but it's why you wear seatbelts, because if you were good at predicting when things would go wrong, you would probably be in that business. And that tells the rest of us, you know, wear the seatbelt. It even tells the people who are good at guessing wear the seatbelt, but that's a different story. All right.
Yeah. And we should also, you know, like, in my mind, when I think of saying yes to things, none of the things I'm thinking of saying yes to are like this high risk, life threatening proposition that also sounds like it could be fun. Like, we're not telling you to go not wear your seatbelt or anything like that. But it's more in terms of like the, I don't know. I think of like everyday inconveniences. Like, is it worth it to put effort into applying for this job that you don't think you're qualified for? But, you know, obviously when actual risk and actual danger comes in, that is a totally different story.
I'm glad you brought that up, because someone on the internet posed the question recently, are there lines from a poem that echo in your head and serve as a guidepost for you? And you know which one I'm going to bring up, Katie. Do you?
No, maybe.
I wish I could go back and do the little things you asked me to. It's a slight variation on a part of a poem by Alice Chase to my grown-up son. And it's about her regrets looking back on her son's childhood that she didn't say yes to these little things he wanted her to do. Play with her, for example. And so I read that book in high school, and I knew someday if I ever became a mom, I didn't want to be the person in the poem. So as you grew up, Katie, as you know, because I told you eventually that this was happening, you would ask me to do something and those lines would come up. I wish I could go back and do the little things you asked me to. So if I could say yes, I did. And I didn't always say yes immediately, but I almost always reversed my course unless it was something dangerous or we truly couldn't afford it or didn't have time to do it that day or whatever. But what it did for me is taught me that most of what you were asking me for represented a minor inconvenience. And I think I was a much better mom for having read that poem. And of course, as you grew older and wiser, you started using it against me. You remembered the lines in the poem before I did. But I think there are worse things to show a child, this determination only to say no when you have a really good reason.
Yeah. And I think what you said about inconvenience is a really key thing. I think I definitely do this. I'm sure I'm not the only one. that I tend to overestimate the value of inconvenience. And when I think about going out and doing things, I've talked on the show before about the summer of 2016, I decided I was going to go on 100 adventures, and having that goal allowed me to overcome some of the inconvenience that, because you know, there's this great free event happening, but I haven't put on makeup, I'm not dressed, I would have to make myself presentable, and I would have to take the subway to get there, and then what if it's boring? And by removing that barrier, because I needed to reach my adventure quota, I realized that, oh, that awful inconvenience was actually a pretty small thing. And, you know, a lot of those adventures turned out to be pretty boring, but some of them were unbelievably amazing. And it was because of that attitude.
Well, this reminds me that the question about moving into an RV to make this transition to New York was actually the second big yes that I offered. The first one was you in the summer of 2017 saying, okay, now, guys, will you move? This was the plan. I'm settled here. You promised. I need you to tell me that you're actually going to do that. And the two of us looked at you in the Whole Foods in Union Square and said yes to that. And it almost felt like a dare, because there were so many big things that had to happen in the meantime. But that one thing started off this chain of events that, you know, we're living right now. All right. Saying yes is the theme of this show. When we come back, we'll go inside our producer's head on Doing What Works.
We have the best radio stations bringing you Doing What Works every week, like KCYL in Lampasas, Texas.
Back with Doing What Works, I'm Maureen Anderson, your host, joined by Katie Anderson, your other host, and our producer, Daryl. It's time to talk to Daryl about our topic today, which is saying yes to life. This wasn't a question that had been posed to you, Daryl, but there's something very say yes about it that I want to examine in this segment, if we could. When you found yourself in between jobs, when Katie was on the way, you just went into your home office and created this idea for a radio show that would be mostly for farmers, but also to people who wanted to learn more about farming, i.e. what they were eating. And you pitched that to a huge corporation, and the corporation said yes. I mean, it wasn't immediate, but man, looking back, it was pretty fast. So talk about that for a second. What gave you the nerve to do that? I still can't get over it. And it's been, what, 25 years this January?
25 years.
That, congratulations.
That the show began.
Yep.
The idea was planted a few months before that.
Yeah. But what gave you the nerve?
Probably ignorance more than anything, which, you know, has led to a lot of great discoveries. If you don't know what you're doing, or if you don't know how to get there, the only way to do it is, you know, pull your pants up and take off and see what happens. So I don't know. I guess there was some thought given to what to do and how to do it and that sort of thing. I grew up on a farm. I had worked in radio at that point for about 13, 14 years, and I decided that if I was going to do something on my own, it would have to be something along the lines of a syndicated program, and I just put all of those things together. You've got some experience from farming. You've got some experience in radio. You need to do something in syndication to make it, you know, a thing, and came up with an idea for a syndicated farm-based radio program.
And the publication you started working with right away was Successful Farming. You had grown up reading that magazine and knew they didn't have a radio product.
That magazine was in the house. Other farm magazines were there as well, but I remembered that one. And at the time, Successful Farming was the largest farm magazine, paid circulation farm magazine in the country. And so I looked them up. And sent a letter to the editor. They made it pretty easy back then to address a letter to the editor. And he sent me a letter back saying, this sounds like an interesting idea. I've forwarded it to our publisher and let's talk. And so we did.
I remember mailing that letter. I remember driving through the little post office drive and dropping it in the box and saying the following to myself: our lives are going to change with this one thing. And they did.
They did.
That was the start of you and me working from home and raising Katie, who at the time, when she, as she got a little bit older, she started calling it the Sexful Farming Radio Magazine, which said editor loved hearing.
Yeah, they did get a kick out of that. All right.
I'm just thinking about how the phrase "for the Successful Farming Radio Magazine, I'm Daryl Anderson" has been burned into my memory with tone and voice. Like, Daryl, it's going to be a long time after you're gone, and I'll still be able to hear that ringing in my ears if I wanted to.
And the reason is there are these 90-second scripts that Daryl records. He has sound bites from people he interviews, and then you write a script around it, and you have to time those scripts before you record. And you would do that with us around all day long. And so it just kind of burns in your brain.
Well, we didn't have a really formal recording studio, so anytime I was doing that, everybody in the house could hear what was going on. So it worked out really well, because not only for the reasons I mentioned earlier, why we needed to go this way, but it also had a lot of appeal in that I could work from home and you could still do your job, and we can kind of coordinate the childcare thing, and it was really kind of a sweet deal.
It still is. And we'll be right back with more of Doing What Works. Back with Doing What Works. Someday on the show, I want to address the topic again of, can you really change very basic things about yourself? We have covered it on the show. I'm sure the answer was yes, but it's one of those things that niggle at me because it is so hard to change basic things about yourself. One way to do that is to notice things about yourself to begin with, because if you don't even know how you are, how are you going to be able to change who you are? And I had this insight fairly recently with someone I spend a lot of time with. I just noticed that everything that I said, it seemed like this person argued with it. And what I realized right away was I kind of do the same thing when I'm with the person, and it became a one-upmanship. And it's very difficult to recognize these like basic patterns with people. But if you can, it's amazing what you can learn and maybe change. So what I'm proposing, if you're wondering what my point is.
Yes.
Is that you ask yourself, am I the kind of person who argues with everything? Am I the kind of person who, when they hear something from someone, agrees and takes it further, or defaults with no? And you might be surprised and dismayed at the answer. And this came into sharper focus when I read something online that said, do not correct someone if you know what they mean. Now, if I'm mispronouncing a word on the show, I want Daryl to correct me because I don't want you all to think I didn't pass the eighth grade. But there are a lot of times when it's just a stumble, and I don't need to be corrected because it's probably pretty obvious. I knew what I meant to say, and I just didn't get it out right. I don't think a correction is necessary in that case. But the larger issue is, do you make it a habit of arguing with people to prove that you're always right? And the second question is, if so, why? Why do we do that, Katie? Any guesses?
I mean, like with everything, I think it depends on a lot of different factors. I think some people are just naturally inclined to be combative as people.
Yep.
I'm with you. I know that type of person. And when, you know, we tend to mirror the behavior of the people who we're with, and so you can become a combative person if you're engaged in conversation with one. I also think it's sometimes a function of mood. I definitely catch myself. Sometimes I don't realize I'm in a bad mood until I realize that I want to object to everything that somebody's saying. But I think it's mostly an awareness thing. If you realize that you are being combative and you don't know why, that itself might be enough to kind of course correct.
And if I'm Daryl, I'm wondering, how does this relate to the larger point of the show?
Did I guess right? It's like you're inside my head.
And my point is, if you can catch yourself saying no to everything on little things, you might be able to glean that, oh, I wonder if I'm doing that on bigger things too. Is that plausible?
And it's a habit too, right? The first rule of improv is say yes and, but it sounds a lot easier in theory than it actually is in practice. I took an improv class my senior year of college, and we did all of these readings about improv. We had classes on how to properly do improv, all of the stuff, and all of it was like yes and, yes and, yes and. And I thought, okay, cool. Like, that's the one thing that I at least know about improv. And when we finally actually got to the point in class where we were testing it out and we were all trying improv for the first time, the first thing that came out of my mouth was literally the word no.
Huh.
Like, somebody did something and I thought it was a dumb idea, and I tried to steer things in a different direction. And I think my professor stopped us right away and said, you can't do that. So it's one thing to think about the idea of saying yes, but you actually have to see how you're inclined to react in real life and figure out if that's something that you need to work a little bit harder to implement.
That's an interesting example, because it points out that when you are forced to say yes to everything, it may go against what your brain is telling you to do.
That's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's a mindset. If you're constantly saying, but this, to the people in your life, then let's substitute something that you want that's important, an important work project that you know you should be doing, but you're constantly batting that away with your fears. But this, but what if... what if I fail at this like I've failed at everything else so far, or whatever? So if you can practice on the people in your life with mundane situations, you might be able to wrangle the bigger, more important things because you've gotten in shape for them.
That's actually a really fun game you can play. I took another improv class. I audited an MBA improv class, if you can believe that, this spring. And one of the games we played was you pair off, and first you have a conversation where every sentence starts with yes and you see how everything builds on each other, and then you have a conversation where every sentence starts with yes, but, which is basically impossible because you're saying yes, but then you're going in a different direction. And it's just a really weird, like awkward fumble. And then you have a conversation where every person starts with no, but, and it's just a train wreck because both people are just constantly disagreeing with each other and shutting each other down. And it's, you know, it's silly when you're in a confined space, but then you can take that out with you in the real world and it actually matters.
If you can look at yourself as if from a distance, like you're watching a movie or looking down at yourself from an airplane, it's actually kind of amazing how pathetic you can be at times. And how easy.
That's what I'm here for. I'm here to tell you that as an outside observer.
That was not what I thought you were going to say.
How easy it is with one single word to change the course of a conversation and therefore a life. And when we come back, we'll talk about a big implication of that. Straight ahead on Doing What Works.
Ever wish you had your own personal life coach who didn't charge you a penny? Now you do with Doing What Works. We have the best radio stations bringing you Doing What Works every week, like WATT in Cadillac, Michigan.
You are listening to Doing What Works. Katie Anderson is with you. She is your host, and aren't you lucky? She's so full of wisdom and insight for only being in her mid-20s. I'm Maureen Anderson, your other host. Slightly less wisdom and insight, especially considering how many years I have on Katie. And our producer, Daryl, joins us as always. We are talking about saying yes to life. And one way you get in practice for saying yes to the big things in life, the things you know you need to do to be happy with your life by the time it winds down, is by practicing on little things, like saying yes to conversational things with very low stakes, but, you know, just get in the practice of rolling with a conversation instead of always rolling against it, always arguing with people, and so on. And one way, if you need help convincing yourself that it's the right thing to do, remember that, as Dilbert creator Scott Adams would say, we're all watching different movies. Two completely different points of view can both be right at the same time. And if you can't imagine that, Scott says, maybe it's because you're not good at imagining things. But it's a sign of intelligence, I've also always heard, that by the ability to hold two completely opposing points of view at once in your brain is a sign of intelligence. Another sign of intelligence would be to have gotten the previous sentiment out without stumbling on it as much as I did. And I obviously failed. But Doing What Works is about learning, not doing. And here we are. All right, Katie, I covered something sweeping there. I kind of botched it. But the main thing is, learn how to say yes to the big things in life by practicing on little things like conversational asides that don't really have big stakes.
Yeah, and just because I'm feeling combative, I would also like to point out that, Daryl, she didn't say anything about your level of wisdom in the introduction to this segment.
I have nothing to say to that.
He's listening. He didn't take the bait.
Not this time.
Speaking of the person I'm married to, is there a bigger say yes to life than the whole I do thing? It's like Jerry Seinfeld says, this kind of feels right. Let's change everything forever. I mean, a lot of people think it's going to be forever. We thought it would still think it's going to be
it
forever.
It just seems like forever.
Oh, thank you for that.
The idea is forever.
Yeah, my uncle said that when I told him I was going to get married to you, he said, "That's great. You're saying yes to life." And I never thought of it that way, but you are.
Well, you're saying yes to something.
Yep.
Which involves pretty much the rest of your life as we know it.
Yep.
So,
Katie, let's get back to the theme of the show, which is catching yourself in the moment before you say anything. When an opportunity arises, what criteria do you use, for example, to know if it's something you want to say yes to?
So I think a lot of it is just, and this comes up a lot on the show, a lot of it is just recognizing the reality of the situation instead of going with your gut instinct, which, you know, I have a lot of difficulty with this actually, because I used to think that I was a pretty spontaneous person, but as I started growing up, as I learned to love my calendar as much as I do, I kind of realized that at least when it comes to scheduling things, I tend to not say yes to things depending on when they come up. I have this idea of what the next few days are going to look like, and if there's an evening or something that happens to not have anything going on during it, I will catch myself planning for different levels of rest, like chores to get done. I'll kind of start filling in that empty space to the point where it's not really empty anymore. So I tend to have to actively fight against my knee-jerk reaction to say no to things that are within like the next few days, for example. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's much easier to commit to something a few months out because the reality of fitting it into that day hasn't hit.
I don't know. There's something that I get a lot of value in just being able to kind of mentally prepare myself for the goings on of the day. But also, so that's like an impulse that I have to fight against a lot. But a lot of times when I do fight against it, when somebody says, "Hey, this thing came up tonight, like, do you want to do it?" Part of me is like, I was gonna take a bath tonight, but then I realized that that's a really dumb reason to. I mean, it depends on like how stressed I am, like how badly do I really need that bath? Not like a shower, but like a leisure bath, just to clarify. There's always time for me to shower. But you know, usually when I take advantage of that, so I don't.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you because we're coming up on a break. We'll be right back with that thought on Doing What Works.
If you're plagued by a problem in some part of your life, we think you have the power to change that. It starts right here on Doing What Works.
You are listening to Doing What Works and the exciting conclusion of the shower cliffhanger that Katie left us with before the break. Katie, take it away.
This is not a shower cliffhanger. So one great example of saying yes despite all of my instincts to go home and relax was at work a year or two ago. I was getting ready to go home, and then I found out that there was a group trip that was going to see Waitress, which is my favorite Broadway show. And I had had plans to, I think, go home and take a bath, honestly. But I, like, this opportunity came up, and it was probably a little bit logistically difficult to go to the show instead. But I thought, you know what? Why not? Like, I said yes. I took advantage of it. And because of the specifics of that show that night, like, I ended up after the show getting to do karaoke on the stage by myself, which was just about the coolest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I very easily could have been home taking a bath. And I would have thought that that would have been the best way to spend my night, but I would have been wrong and I wouldn't have even known it. And I think that actually is, like when you say no to things, you don't necessarily see the impact of that because you don't know what isn't happening to you versus when you see yes, at the very least, you have an idea. Like you said yes to this thing and like, it didn't work out, but like, at least I know that that's what would have happened versus
you have more data because something happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have a head filled with all of these grand ideas of things that could or couldn't happen. Like you just have like a more, I guess, clear picture of the reality of this slightly more adventurous life. Does that make sense?
It does.
As you're posed with a situation where you can say yes or no, personally, I think you need to weigh some of the known alternative outcomes of your answer or your decision.
Of course.
You can't know everything, of course. But if you operate through life with a, I'm going to say yes to everything, you're going to get yourself in trouble because you don't have enough time in the day to do all the things that you're saying yes to.
I don't think we're suggesting that. I think we're saying it's easy to lapse into saying no to everything and reversing that inertia a little bit. And honestly, that leads into a point I wanted to make before we disbanded for the day, which is what you're actually going for is something that you say yes to with so much of your heart and soul that it makes it easier to say no to a lot more of what you were saying yes to before, if that makes sense. It feels like I'm going in the opposite direction to where we've been going all day, but a lot of us say yes all day, every day to things that don't matter to us at all in the interest of trying to keep everybody happy except ourselves. And if you add yourself to the mix and you have this big yes you've got, then it's easier to say no without qualifying that and actually steering your life in the direction you want it to go.
Yeah, believe it or not, the moral of the story is say yes to some things, but not all things. Aren't you glad that you spent the last hour to get to this point?
I still think it's worth exploring. Is your default no or yes? Actually, maybe the larger point is put a little thought into your answer. Is your no because you're going to be inconvenienced, or is your no because it goes against your values?
Yeah, there's a time and a place for everything.
I couldn't have said that better myself.
And now we have the point in the show where we have about 30 seconds left, not enough to dig into the topic anymore, but long enough to tell you that you can subscribe to the podcast for show notes at MaureenAnderson.com. And you can also subscribe to the blog at MaureenAnderson.com. Once a week, we'll give you plenty to think about. We'll never spam you. We'll never share your personal information. And it's only an email address. So there you go.
Say yes to the blog and yes to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you.
You won't regret it.
You will not. And thank you so much for listening to this edition of Doing What Works.
This broadcast is copyrighted by North Shore Productions. Learn more at MaureenAnderson.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod. And you can click on the radio tab for more about him. I'm Cindy Weir. Thanks for listening. And we hope you'll tune in again next week for another thought-provoking hour of inspiration on Doing What Works.